episode of the Film Stage Podcast. I'm Jonah Rout.
And I'm John Lucchetti.
And John's joining us. Dan and Connor are back home having fun. And John's here to fill in. He's another Film Stage writer from Buffalo. And we both saw MacGruber this weekend, so we're going to talk about that later.
Yeah, we did.
And so let's jump right into news stories. So first, the big news story hit that Megan Fox will not be in Transformers 3. First, she said that Paramount dropped their option.
Option
to join it, and then but then it came out that one of Megan Fox's good friends told the Wrap, the website, that it was actually an abusive relationship with the director.
Right. Well, she had complained about that before, didn't she? Isn't that pretty much what sparked all this? She said he was a tyrant, and of course now she's suspiciously being fired. So I don't know. I think I'm on Team Megan Fox for this one. I don't think she's that talented or anything, but she seems to be telling the truth. I mean, he seems like the type that would be pretty abusive towards her.
Yeah. I've seen some of the special features on some of his his films, and he seems like he's a guy that doesn't really care about the actors too much. I mean,
yeah, and I was surprised because, you know, Shia LaBeouf also badmouthed the film, yet he apparently is untouchable because he hasn't even so much as been scolded, or he hasn't had the crew talk bad about him.
and then actually talking about that, Shia LaBeouf, when he was in Cannes promoting Wall Street, like you said, he dissed Transformers, and he said he was sorry for it, and then he had the nerve to diss Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, right? Indiana Jones. He did that. Well, you know, on one hand, it's interesting that he's taking some kind of responsibility, but I don't know. I never like when actors kind of try and distance themselves from movies that didn't live up to expectations, because, you know, everybody, you know, whether or not you liked it or not, you know, you don't need him afterwards saying, like, oh, yeah, I knew it was terrible all along. I'm sorry.
I know, and now I'm waiting for, while he was talking about Transformers, he said how sequels never work out, and he's like the sequel king. Like, now he's in Wall Street, too. So do you think a year from now we're getting an apology for Wall Street?
Most likely, because, I don't know, Wall Street 2 just seems like the basic instinct of this year. I mean, why would you make a sequel to it that late, and for what reason? It just, I don't know.
Well, speaking of that, well, we'll keep updated on Megan. I guess the Gemma Arterton was supposed to be cast, but now it's not looking like that. Now it's looking like actually Jason Statham's girlfriend, this French model.
Jason Statham has a girlfriend?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Now she's been in movies before?
Yeah, Gemma, she was in Clash of the Titans, and she's out in Prince of Persia, this girl.
Oh, okay, I thought you meant somebody else.
No, but and now it's said that someone learned that she's actually not the front runner, and it's actually this model that's Jason Statham's girlfriend that hasn't really been in any movies, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems weird, whoever they're going to go with, because Megan Fox is already pretty iconic as far as being, you know, the go-to good-looking actress of her generation, so I wonder how that's going to play out.
Yeah, but I don't know, because, like, if you think about it, she was in this movie, and then she has Jennifer's Body, which tanked,
Then
Jonah Hex looks like it's going to tank too. So.
Yeah, Jonah Hex looks like they just needed to reuse the sets from that Hugh Jackman and Van Helsing film.
Oh,
yeah. They needed
and
the
Wild,
reused to
and
make
Wild,
their budget
Wild
back.
West.
Yeah, Wild West.
But yeah, no, but I mean, Megan Fox, she was in How to Make Friends and Alienate People, or what is it, that movie with Simon Pegg, which I saw, and she wasn't, that was like the movie where she tried the hardest, and it didn't work out.
Well,
so
that's unfortunate for her. Yeah, I never even saw that one. I know Kristen Dunst was in it as well.
Yeah, How to Lose. And then, she hasn't really, I mean, after Transformers, she hasn't really made, out of what we said, she hasn't made much. She does have Passion Play coming up with Mickey Rourke, which probably soon. So, I mean, that'll see. I can't say there's a movie she's been in that I've, like, actually liked her performance. Like, she was one of the worst parts of Transformers.
Right, but I mean, isn't that kind of the point with her? I mean, you're not getting her for her, you know, caliber of talent, really.
True.
So,
yeah. I don't know who, what slow motion zoom up to their butt, how shot we're gonna get next?
Well, the model sounds like a good route to go. Yeah. If you're gonna go for a replacement, just go with the model. You know, she doesn't need to talk or walk or anything. I mean, just let her sit there and be pretty.
Yeah, totally. So I guess we won't keep you updated on that until there's an official answer. Because
we're gonna get like 1,000 names before you even find out who it is. And who knows? By then, maybe Megan Fox will get hired back or something.
Yeah. She realizes, oh shit, I just lost millions of dollars.
Yeah.
All right. Well, actually, like we talked about Wall Street, which premiered at Cannes.
Mm-hmm.
So Cannes...
was it in competition at Cannes, or was it
out
of competition?
No, it was out of competition.
Okay.
Yeah, and so that wrapped up this weekend, and the film, the big winner was Uncle Boonmi, Who Can Recall His Past Lives.
Okay.
And I'm not even going to try to pronounce the director's name, but it's a Thailand film, and I've never seen any of the director's other work, but it's weird, because like, it seems that it's kind of divisive, because... I know, first showing, Alex, first showing, I met at Toronto, actually, and he said he walked out of this movie, he didn't really like it, but he's a very kind of mainstream taste. So.
Well, they were predicting an odd choice because of Tim Burton, right?
Yeah.
So,
that's true,
is there anything in this film that makes you think Tim Burton's, like, does it have Tim Burton's kind of, like, seal of approval?
You know? I don't know, I know he actually...
Is Johnny Depp in this movie?
No, it's not, no.
Okay.
He did actually Syndromes in a Century, which I've heard is excellent, and Tropical Malady, mm-hmm. which I both heard are really, really good. I haven't heard of his. He made three films before that, but no, I saw the trailer. I mean, I think this is a movie where you kind of have to watch it because it seemed kind of dry from the trailer. But
okay.
But I'm excited for it. And the other big winner was Best Actor Javier Bardem,
okay.
Tied with Elio Germani. Germano for another film.
See, this is my favorite segment because it's you trying to pronounce really difficult names. This works.
So, and I actually beautiful is one of my.
Is that how it's pronounced? It doesn't.
Yeah,
look,
beautiful. Yeah.
I always thought it was like beautiful.
I mean, it could be. You know, I mean, it's Alejandro Iñárritu.
Yeah.
Who did have you seen
Babel?
Yeah, I love Amores Perros, and even I like Babel. 21 Grams, I really liked, and but yeah, no, Javier Bardem is in this one. And,
does this one also have kind of the disjointed storytelling?
I don't think it does. I think it's just more of a character drama, a single character.
Because
drama.
I saw one of the guy who wrote Amores Perros and all those films. He finally directed one of his own movies, The Burning Plain,
right,
which had that same kind of structure. And I was kind of wondering if...
was that a good movie? I didn't...
It had its moments.
Yeah.
Kim Basinger is really, really great in it. And Charlize Theron is still stuck on that mode where she just stares and pouts at the camera now because that's her being serious and moody. I was interested to see if he was going to continue along with the fractured storylines after...
No, this is... I think this is just a singular storyline.
Okay.
I know it's about a cop and his brother, and I think that's how we brought them. And so... anyway, so yeah, he won, and I guess there's no plans for U.S. distribution yet, but I hope, come Oscar time, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Be there.
Is it in foreign language, or is it in
yeah,
English?
Yeah, it is.
No, so they did do it in Spanish.
Yeah, they did in Spanish, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And, but I mean, out of, the only Beautiful's only kind of film that actually was up for, that actually won an award that I think could maybe transfer for Oscar time, because Best Actress went to Julia Binoche for... Kiarostami's Certified Copy.
Right, which, like I said, is so tacky. She's on the poster for the festival. It's like, if the host of the Oscars is nominated for it, you don't do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, it's interesting, because I had heard some buzz for a different contender for Best Actress, the woman who's in the Mike Lee film. I had heard...
Yeah, another year, yeah. That which, surprisingly, that got no consideration for anything. I mean, got no awards for anything.
Yeah,
another
poor year. Mike Lee. He can't seem to catch a break lately.
Yeah. But it was funny, because Certified Copy, I was just reading the Twitter reactions from, when I come out of the festival, they said it got boos and stuff, so I don't know, but then everyone I read said, oh, it got boos, but I loved it, so I don't...
Yeah, people in Cannes love Cannes. Am I saying it retarded? I'm sorry.
I think it's it.
I'm going to call it Cannes.
Okay.
they love to boo their features. I mean, I think it's almost better to get booed there, because at least they're paying attention.
And, yeah, you get some buzz, yeah. And then
who took Best Director?
I was just going to say Matthew Almerich
on
tour, who I love his work, and
he did. What was his last feature?
I don't know what he directed, but he's an actor.
He was in
James Bond,
the Christmas Story film, or
yeah, the Christmas Tale.
The Christmas Tale. Okay, that's where his name's from.
Yeah, and he's also he was also in Diamond Bell and the Butterfly.
Okay, all right, that makes sense.
Yeah. And but yeah, this was I don't think it was his first feature, but then he picked up Best Director. Well,
that's pretty impressive that they would. I mean, it doesn't seem like a group that prestigious would be that willing to kind of hand it out to an actor turned director. It seems like they would be a little bit more snobbish, so to speak, about.
Yeah, actually, no, he has directed some stuff, but nothing. I mean, I haven't actually heard of any of his other films, but this one on tour. This is his first one since 2007 that he directed.
Okay.
But yeah, no, he's actually in Luc Besson's next movie, The Extraordinary Adventures of Adelie Blanc-Seic.
This is like a marathon of hard words to pronounce. I'm loving it.
Have you ever seen that trailer for that, Luc Besson's next movie? It features like a pterodactyl. It's like crazy.
What?
Yeah.
No, I have not, obviously, but my shocked reaction to the pterodactyl.
Yeah. So anyways, he picked up Best Director, and I assume we'll see a lot of these releases. At least, I know IFC picked up Certified Copy, and hopefully we'll see him in the U.S., But yeah, so that kind of rounds out Cannes, and I read a lot of reactions where there hasn't been any like knockout hits, like Like, even Woody Allen's film,
yeah.
You Want Me to Tall Dark Stranger, got really mixed reactions. And Wall Street got positive ones, but it also had a few negative ones in there. And, but yeah, that, I mean, for those, there wasn't any, like, oh, wow, this movie's gonna, you know, when come Oscar time, gonna win, so.
Right.
Mike Lee's, or I mean, Doug Liman's Fair Game, with Sean Penn, Naomi Watts, that was kind of the most buzzed about one. Mm-hmm. And that kind of fizzled out a little, And then Ken Loach's.
Ken is always kind of like not really a precursor to like American awards. Like, yeah. They always think it's going to be, but
yeah.
It's very rare that Cannes and the Oscars really line up. So
it's usually Toronto, right? Toronto and Venice.
Is like Toronto the, became pretty big, yeah, right. But Venice I think is probably the most accurate. It seems like.
Yeah, and yeah, so yeah, and then the other one I was gonna say, Ken Loach, who did who won the Palme d'Or with Wind Shakes the Barley with Cillian Murphy. Mm-hmm. I love that movie, but I haven't seen it. And then his most recent one, Looking for Eric, just hit U.S. That premiered at Cannes last year, and then he came back with this movie called Rude Irish, and kind of mediocre reviews. So, So yeah, so I'm looking forward to seeing most of these eventually, but it doesn't look like there's many massive winners. So yeah. All right, let's move on to our next story. Now, these next two stories can be combined. Two huge video games are going to get film adaptation. The first we reported last week, Heavy Rain, is a PS3 game that came out earlier this year, and it's kind of like the game itself is already cinematic. It kind of follows this film noir mystery, and in the game, it's not a lot of like button mashing or like action shooting. It's a lot of like, oh, go over here and you'll feel something. Like, it's all of emotion-based. It's really weird. Like, it feels... Yeah, it's really weird. It's a really interesting game. I won't play the demo, but it's very...
What are the characters like, guys?
There's four characters, four protagonists, and involved with the mystery of the Origami Killer. Mm-hmm. And it's a serial killer who uses extended periods of rainfall to drown his victims. It's kind of crazy. I haven't got that far in the game to realize that, but yeah, Warner Brothers has a first look on this, and, I guess it's weird. I guess New Line optioned the rights way back in 2006 E3, the Electronic Expo, where they show video games.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the news is just coming out now that they picked it up. So after Bob Shea, who kind of fucked up New Line,
they actually spent a good section of that Nightmare on Elm Street documentary eulogizing New Line Cinema and Bob Shea's decisions. It takes a lot of gusto to make the most profitable film of all time and then go bankrupt 2 years later.
Yeah, yeah. So. Totally. But then he formed his, I guess, another shingle called Unique Features, who is going to pick up this movie. I mean, I'd be interested to see another kind of cool noir film.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I guess you could just play the video game if you really want to see it, because I guess I can't see it being that different.
It makes me wonder how much, you know, kind of effort they're going to put into this, because really, video game adaptations, even kind of something like Silent Hill,
yeah.
Which was somewhat cinematic and had a pretty strong fan base, like, even that was kind of a half-hearted effort. I mean,
yeah.
It takes a lot to get good talent behind these types
and
of
that
films.
But that was even one of the best ones, and that was half-hearted, so it's like...
That was one of the better ones, and it was still kind of only mediocre.
Yeah, and I mean, we're going to see next week Prince of Persia. We'll have to see. The buzz has been kind of mediocre for that.
Yeah,
so.
Prince of Persia, where all white people play Persian people.
Yes, exactly. And I'm trying to think of that. I mean, and the next video game... that just got announced last night is Mass Effect. And this is a huge sci-fi epic. BioWare made this, and they're known for kind of their huge, expansive like RPGs.
Mm-hmm.
And Warner Brothers actually, in partnering with Legendary Pictures, like they always do, is picked up the rights for this. And the guy that wrote I Am Legend and Thor, Mark Protasiewicz. there's another one. Sorry, Mark.
That one's a little easier. I think that's Polish.
Anyways, he is writing the script, and people kind of saw this news story and immediately thought of Chris Nolan, because Legendary and Warner Brothers has done all the Chris Nolan films, the same production company. So I don't know, like, there's no way he would do this film.
Yeah, I don't think Chris Nolan's gonna take on video game adaptations just right now.
And Avi and Ari Arad, who Avi used to be the head of Marvel company and kind of Iron Man brought Iron Man. To the forefront, like, they are behind this, and they're also actually behind a game we talked about a couple weeks ago, Uncharted,
mm-hmm.
Which I love that game, and I actually think a lot of people said it wouldn't translate well to film, and I think if it done right, it could. They said David O. Russell was attached to that, which would be a really, really odd choice, but
yeah.
I think if the right director, it could be kind of this, you know, Indiana Jones. I know the game itself is kind of Indiana Jones parody, but if they do it right, I think it could work
right.
But yeah, I don't, you said you haven't really played
No, yeah, I don't really play more of the PS3 type games. I mean, I tried to play the GameCube once. It took me a year to beat a game, so I kind of gave up.
Yeah.
I just play, you know, Mario.
Yeah,
Metroid.
Actually, yeah, RPGs like this, I never had the patience for, because it just takes up so much time.
It also seems like a lot of the times these video game adaptations get announced and just never happen.
Yeah, totally.
Like, what's the one they've been trying to, like, Quake? Haven't they been trying to get that off
Quake.
The ground for, you know, decades now,
it seems like? Yeah, Duke Nukem.
Yeah, but, well, I know they optioned, like, John Woo had optioned Metroid, like, probably, like, six or seven years ago, and that's never going to happen. And that would be one I'd be super excited to see.
I mean, Halo, obviously, that's the big one.
Yeah.
And then Neil Blomkamp did District 9 after that fell apart. But yeah, no, one of the producers said because of the success of Avatar and, like, the non-human characters, to show that audiences, if done right, they can actually relate to the non-human characters. So, like, I guess, I mean, if Avatar is bringing these kind of cool sci-fi stories, I wouldn't mind it, but...
Yeah, but good luck getting that budget.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That's not going to happen.
Exactly.
It's going to look like Jar Jar Binks and be awful. I don't know.
And, yeah, so, I don't know. We'll keep you updated. I mean, I think it's there that, I mean, they could do it kind of a massive sci-fi universe that's already kind of laid out for you. I think that's better than kind of making up as you go. So
definitely sounds interesting.
Actually, and included in this new story, which I thought interesting, no one's reporting this yet, but I found it in buried in the bottom of the news story that this guy that's writing Mass Effect is also still adapting Old Boy, an English remake. Now, have you seen Old Boy?
Yeah, I have.
And... Now, Steven Spielberg and Will Smith were going to make it, and thank God they stepped away from it, but just the fact that someone's writing this and it's possibly getting made, it
doesn't seem like it's something that's going to be able to translate
to an English story
at all. But.
Someone actually joked, now, spoilers for Old Boy coming up. At the end of Old Boy, they found out, you know, it's his daughter, right?
Right.
And they said in the English one, it'll be his, like, second cousin twice removed, because, like, they don't want to, like, go right to the daughter, so.
Jeez.
I don't know. No, so, I hope that never gets made, but I hope Mass Effect, you know, I wouldn't mind it, so.
Yeah.
Alright, let's move on to the next story. Now, James Franco. Now, he kind of rose to fame with Freaks and Geeks.
Right.
And since then, I mean, he went right into Spider-Man, Green Goblin.
Yeah.
And then Pineapple Express and Milk in the same year. It was great. Mm-hmm. And he's actually one of the standouts for me, Pineapple Express. I kind of love that movie the more I watch it.
He looked like a lot of fun in that.
And then he's actually in his David Gordon Green's next movie, Your Highness, which unfortunately got pushed back to April, but that's a good day for it, I think.
Yeah, still probably.
And then he's also in Danny Boyle's 127 Hours, the lead role. And now two more of his films.
He's also got
Howl
coming up as well.
Which actually, it didn't get great reviews at Sundance, but I'm still excited to see it.
Yeah, I mean, you never know with, like, those types of movies.
Yeah.
Like, they can be pretty off-putting with biopics. Some people just don't like them, and
that's true.
Tends to happen. And you also forgot to mention his stint on General Hospital.
Yes, which he's back this summer, did you hear?
He's back!
Yes!
He's doing everything possible to have the most bizarre career in Hollywood right now.
I don't know
what his game plan is.
I have no idea, but now these next two aren't really that exciting, but he is going to play the lead in Rise of the Apes. This is the Fox prequel to the Ape franchise. And Rupert Wyatt, who just did a movie, the only movie he's really been popular for is The Escapist, which actually didn't get that much buzz a couple years ago. But Peter Jackson's Weta Digital Effects, which is kind of the cutting edge visual effects team, is going to be behind this, which kind of gives me hope. But Franco will play a young scientist who becomes a crucial figure in the war between humans and apes. And the film, the basis of the film is it's set in contemporary San Francisco, where a genetic engineering experiment leads to the creation of intelligence in apes, causing an inevitable conflict between species. So what do you think about this project?
I think the best part about Planet of the Apes is the twist, and if they're going to do an entire movie that explains away the twist, I don't think that's really going to work.
Mm-hmm.
It has some potential to be interesting, and it sounds a lot more interesting than
Tim Burton's.
Well, at least Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes, he stepped away from Johnny Depp for half a second, so, you know, it was okay. But, it sounds way interesting than kind of rehashing it or even doing another sequel. But part of me always thinks with these prequels that it's really only going to be a half hour's worth of prequel, and then you're going to end up, you know, rehashing the rest. Because, I mean, it just seems like it's not going to work.
Yeah, no, totally. Actually, speaking of that, that's kind of you didn't see Robin Hood, but that's one of the things I liked about Robin Hood. It was just a prequel. Which, by the way, if you guys didn't like Robin Hood or if you liked it, regardless, check out Dan's article. He kind of tries to defend it. Just search Robin Hood on our site, and he just put it up a couple of days ago. It's probably a pretty good article. But what's funny about this, Rise of the Apes is not going to film until July 5th, and then it's going to be released. So they haven't shot a frame of it yet, but it's going to be released in less than a year after it starts production. And it just seems like they're rushing these things. Like Matthew Vaughn on Fox is also doing his X-Men. That hasn't shot anything, and that's going to be released next June. So either these movies are going to get pushed back, or they're going to be kind of sloppy, I feel like.
Yeah, anytime the release date's out before the frame first frame is shot, that's not a good sign, especially if they have a lot of digital work to do on it.
Well, they do. I mean, for blockbusters, they do that a lot, but I don't like Batman 3 already has a release, but they have to kind of plan it. But it's funny because they're just kind of doing it. It's not like it's 2012 release. You know, it's like next year, next summer. And even they pushed back Mission Impossible 4, but that was going to be next May, but they pushed it back to December, which was a good choice. I wonder if they're going to do the same with this. Anyways, and then he got attached to even a worse project,
worse.
Yes. Now this is from the guy that brought us Beverly Hills Chihuahua.
Great film.
I've never
seen that film.
It could be one of those films where just no one ever saw it, so it could be great, but you just never know.
No, I really love Jamie Lee Curtis, but I would not see that movie. No.
And but anyways, yeah, Jeff Bushel was behind that, and actually Drawn Together, which is kind of funny. But yeah, not on.
Drawn Together tried really hard to be funny, and I'll admire it for that, but I don't think it ever actually achieved being funny.
And so this movie's called Ricky Stenicki. And it's another kind of crazy comedy. So it's funny. Franco's doing like these Oscar movies with 127 hours, and then he's doing like just these comedies and then these huge blockbusters. But I'm not even going to read the summary because it just looks so stupid. So Summit is
behind that. We won't dignify it with the summary.
So if you want to read about that comedy, you can go on our site if you want. So anyways, Franco's, I guess we'll have at least 127 hours and Your Highness to look forward to. And then he has these two movies next. So we'll see.
Yeah, well, he's going to make that money somehow.
And that's true. At least he's getting the work. All right. Yeah. So next story, Reese Witherspoon is attached to Paul Thomas Anderson's The Master. This film kind of had trouble financing wise, but it's back. And even Production Weekly, who's usually right, they said production is set to go ahead in June, which is as soon as next week. And this film is loosely based on the life and times of L. Ron Hubbard, who is the founder of Scientology, and who will be played by Philip Seymour Hoffman, Anderson fave, and then Jeremy Renner, who everyone saw in The Hurt Locker, Oscar nominated, is going to be kind of his right-hand man, a young drifter that kind of learns the ways of Scientology.
Aren't all Scientologists drifters?
That's true.
Did you know I'm a Scientologist?
Are you?
No.
Oh, okay. God damn it, John. I thought you could give us some insight here.
I have seen their kiosk in the mall, and I've been interested in taking their stress test.
Nice. And anyway, so
who's Witherspoon gonna play?
Yeah, Witherspoon would play one of the master's daughters, who acts as a caretaker. And
wait, she's supposed to be the daughter of Philip Seymour Hoffman?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Interesting.
Well, this is the thing. The playlist who speculated this, they read the script, and there was that role, and then there was this very minor role of a prostitute, and so they thought that she might play the daughter, because it's a much more substantial role, but she could be that, I guess. I don't know.
And yeah, I mean, they might age, Philip Seymour Hoffman a little bit for this.
Yeah, yeah. And, but anyways, I'm surprised if it would start, June, but I love, are you a fan of Paul Thomas Anderson?
Yeah, I've always enjoyed most of his work, and, I'm pretty sure he's gonna do something interesting with that. I would just hate for him to, disappear after it came out.
Yeah.
Because the Scientologists like to take care of problems. And maybe we shouldn't be saying this on this podcast, actually.
This is the last one you'll ever hear.
And that'll be the last Paul Thomas Anderson movie you'll ever see. So.
Yeah, but he hasn't really made a bad movie yet. And The Master is a tentative title. That's just kind of what the internet is calling it. But I think it's a good title for a movie like this. So.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm sure the title will get adjusted. It just seems like it will.
Yeah. And, so we'll definitely keep you updated on everything with that. Let's talk about our last news story. This is Quentin Tarantino, a sequel to Quentin Tarantino's 1997 film, Jackie Brown, is in the works. Are you a fan of Jackie Brown?
Yes, Jackie Brown is actually my favorite Tarantino film.
Yeah, that's funny. I think Dan, it's his too. I went on a Tarantino and watched all of his movies one day. And
that must have been exhausting.
I
love his movies, but that sounds exhausting.
Yeah, and I really like Jackie Brown, but it seems like no one really talks about it when they talk about Tarantino.
Well, because Jackie Brown is the least Tarantino film Tarantino's ever made, and that's kind of what makes it so great, because all of his movies, although great, sometimes tend to get a little weird. played down with how Tarantino they are. And so with Jackie Brown, it's just much more subtle. It is a little overly long compared to some of his other movies, I've felt. But it's a really great story and two fantastic performances from Pam Grier and Robert Forster. So this one's going to focus on the Sam Jackson and Robert De Niro characters, you said, though, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's based on when Tarantino wrote his screenplay, he said he was a big fan of this novel called The Switch by Elmore Leonard. Mm-hmm. And so Jackie Brown was kind of a sequel to that. And so this is going to kind of go back to the original book. And even though Tarantino will be in no way involved in this, he said he's given his blessing. But yeah, it follows a younger Robbie who's played by Samuel L. Jackson, and a younger Gara, who's played by Robert De Niro, in Jackie Brown. Obviously, they're not going to, you know, take on this film. But right now, they're searching. They have no studio yet, but when they get a studio, they're still searching for directors and a cast.
In the great tradition of Tarantino resurrecting people's careers,
yeah.
I have a great idea for this. They need to get that kid who was in A Bronx Tale, who was the Robert De Niro in that, get him back in the movie. Yeah. I mean, he could be the young Robert De Niro again,
and
he could
crossover.
He'll have a career again, and he won't have to break into people's houses like he was doing for a while.
And who could play young Samuel L. Jackson?
Samuel L. Jackson.
You think so?
Yeah, he can just play young Samuel L. Jackson. Black don't crack.
Or Chris Tucker, maybe? No.
Well, yeah, Chris Tucker. I don't know. If Chris Tucker could, like, subdue it just a little. I mean, it's hard to be more over the top than Samuel L. Jackson, but if you can bring it down just a notch, he could do it.
Yeah, so, I feel like it's going to take a long, long time to get off the ground. But yeah, we'll keep you updated on The Switch, which is kind of interesting. There's a movie coming out in August called The Switch with Jennifer Aniston and Jason Bateman.
I think there was a movie in the early 90s called The Switch, too.
Yeah. Actually, if you go on IMDb, there's over five movies called The Switch.
Oh, wow. Great title. Great title.
So keep on using it. All right. Let's move on to our review of MacGruber.
MacGruber.
So this is based on the SNL skit. I think I've only seen one of the actual sketches. Have you seen...
I think I'd seen one before, but the most prominent ones I know are from the most recent Betty White episode, which
yes.
I think, you know, Betty White kind of made those sketches, actually, yeah. So without her in the movie, I was a little let down, but they're interesting sketches, but I think, you know, they work really well as being short, like, they're usually very, very short.
Yeah, which I think everyone, when this news story came out that they're actually making a film, that's what everyone immediately said, like, it's based on a sketch where the character dies at the end.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, let's turn to the feature. But no, I mean, I personally think that it worked out pretty well, and I liked. It's directed by Yorma Taccone, another. it's either Jorma or Yorma, but I feel like that would be
Yorma Taccone.
Yorma Taccone. No, he's. I mean, you probably recognize him from Saturday Night Live. He's a writer on there too, and he also directs a lot of the digital shorts.
Oh, okay.
And I was surprised how much style this film kind of had for kind of a cheap. I mean, it was made for less than $10 million.
Yeah, when I found out it was $10 million, I was actually very, very surprised because other than I think like one kind of shoddy effect shot, most of it looked really great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, are you talking about towards the end of the film, the very end?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I think it was supposed to be like
Well,
that.
Yeah, of course, but, like, you know, still, it didn't cost the money, no.
Yeah,
it?
Exactly.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was very, you know, laugh-out-loud funny. I found myself laughing a lot. I also feel like it's a movie that has little to no replay value.
Yeah.
I can't imagine myself ever sitting down and watching this ever again, but I'm glad I watched it the one time.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I mean, like, I always thought, for some reason, I always thought Hot Rod was an SNL film, but it's not, because obviously the character's not in there, but there's SNL favorites in there.
Right, well,
and,
naturally.
Yeah, and that's a film where I can actually rewatch and find it funny, but yeah, no, this movie, I had a great time watching, and I think it'll be kind of a cult hit in the sense, like, oh, you have to check out this movie, not in the sense of let's all get together every weekend and watch it.
It could, but I feel like we would have heard a little bit more of that during pre-release. And
yeah,
I don't know. It has the potential.
It's funny because, like, it got great reviews at South by Southwest, and then it kind of tanked with regular critics, which is normal for a film like this.
Yeah.
And then it made literally no money, $4.1 million.
Yeah.
I mean, I would like to have $4.1 million, but I'm sure the studio Universal, who has been known for the string of bombs,
but it could, if it only cost $10 million, it could make it up to 20 when it's all said and done, which would be fine.
But anyway, I mean, I liked this movie. I mean, I agree with John. I really had a great time in the theater watching it. It was really funny. But I mean, it is inherently stupid, as you can tell from the trailer. And there's very little, like, there's a lot of, actually, there was a surprising amount of dead jokes, I thought.
Yeah.
Like, but the jokes that hit, they hit pretty hard, I thought.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Like I said, it was pretty laugh-out-loud funny. I thought all of the three leads were pretty great. Kristen Wiig is carrying Saturday Night Live at this point. I mean, she's really the only watchable thing on it anymore. And, you know, Ryan Phillippe was great because he never seemed in on the joke, which is what kept it going.
Yeah,
so
it was funny because Jack, I mean, I added Jack Drew's article, I mean, review for this, and he said he didn't like Ryan Phillippe because he wasn't funny, but he wasn't, he was kind of the straight, only straight one in the movie, which I really liked, and I thought he did a really good job.
Yeah, and he brought, like, a level of intensity to the role. Yeah. And, you know, he's played this kind of similar role before in something like Stop Loss. He's played, like, the actual serious military guy before. So it was really interesting to see him do this. And I also, Jack said this was the best Saturday Night Live film since Wayne's World, and I feel I should remind him that that says nothing. Because Wayne's World is the only good Saturday Night Live film. And
Blues Brothers, was that Saturday Night Live?
You don't like Blues Brothers? I guess so. But, you know, that was before there was such a thing as the Saturday Night Live film, right?
That's true. That was
Yeah, and then if you count Blues Brothers 2000, it kind of discounts any of that anyway.
Which I have yet to watch.
There's no reason. But like I said, with Wayne's World, like, it's also laugh out loud funny, but, you know, I've seen that probably 200 times. I watch it all the time. I can quote it from start to finish. Mm-hmm. It's like, that is like the pinnacle of Saturday Night Live film. And if they could achieve something like that again, I would be A, shocked, and B, extremely happy. So,
yeah. I mean, Will Forte was hilarious in this. I think Val Kilmer as Dieter von Kump, which they remind you about 500 times by just saying
over and over. And then I also like to mention the Molson. They mention Molson's beer like 5 times, yet it's never seen on screen. And the one time you do see them drinking beer on screen, it's Coors Light. Yet they keep mentioning Molson's.
Maybe they just have a thing for it. They didn't even ask Molson if they wanted in on it.
I kept thinking, is somebody in this movie like noticeably Canadian, and I'm supposed to get this as a joke or something, and I just still don't know what it was all about.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think this movie is like The Expendables, which is coming out later this year, which looks terrible, and I think, like,
terribly great.
No, not even close. I think I'm the only one on the internet that thinks that. Anyways, every time I say that, I just get harassed because it's like, oh, you're not a real man if you don't like
that one. Oh yeah, well, you're clearly not a real man if you don't like that. No, I actually haven't watched the trailer for that, but
I try to avoid it. No, but I was gonna say, like, this just takes the 80s genre and just, like, and kind of, like, makes fun of it and stuff. And I think, and Expendables is trying to get back to the 80s genre, but it just looks so stupid and not in an awesome, stupid way. And this movie is awesome.
They're not
stupid.
In on the joke.
Yeah, exactly. I think even, like, movies like A-Team, which will actually kind of deliver on, like the 80s-esque.
I wouldn't discount Sylvester Stallone, though. I mean, nobody saw, you know, Rocky Balboa and Rambo coming. And those the remakes. The reinvigorations of those series, and those both managed to do crazy money. So,
money. I mean, that's another thing. I really dislike both of those.
Oh, really? I thought Rocky Balboa got pretty good reviews. Maybe not. I don't know. I think Howard Stern liked it.
Yeah, they both got kind of mediocre. Rambo did not get good reviews, but it's become kind of a cult hit, and that's what people keep referencing when they talk about Expendables. But
With the whole, like, parody of the genre thing, it's weird because I'm not really a fan of this genre. So there were a lot of times where I felt kind of bored, and a lot of the times when you're parodying a genre, like, sometimes the jokes just don't work in that way. And, you know, like, an antithesis for that would be something like Hot Fuzz, where A, I don't know that genre very well, and B, I don't, you know, care for it either, but the jokes all still really work pretty well. So I think that was, like, another thing with this. Unless you're, like, either A, a fan of, you know, the 80s action genre, or B, you know, like these kind of films, you might not really be able to...
Yeah, actually, like, a great example of that, actually, when I was in a theater, which didn't get very many laughs, but In the beginning of the movie, like, almost the very beginning, when MacGruber, now this is, I guess, spoilers coming up. Actually, from now on, let's just talk about spoilers, because I feel like that's all that's left in this, talking about this movie.
Okay.
So first of all, I would recommend seeing this movie. It's funny.
Yeah.
I mean, DVD, you could rent it.
I think I don't think it would lose anything if you saw it on DVD, because the crowds in the theater aren't going to be there to make that kind of fun event movie.
Yeah. But one of the first scenes, MacGruber is kind of, he used to be, you know, this very well decorated army general, which I thought was hilarious. That scene, they like set all his medals, and then he's, you know, kind of like the story where he comes back for one more mission type thing, mm-hmm. and the beginning, like, the general who's played
Powers Booth.
Yes, yes. Who was great, I thought.
He was pretty funny. And I think he could have overplayed it just a little bit more.
But that whole beginning scene where he's kind of talking about him coming back, I thought that was really funny, but, I mean, it didn't really get much reaction in the theater.
Yeah, no, it kind of reminded me of, like, the type of scenes you would get in, like, the Hot Shot movies. It was very similar to that, where they just, like, give you this ridiculously long list, but it was pretty funny. I don't think I laughed, though.
The first, though, like, laugh out loud, like, I kind of, now I know where this movie's headed, is... McGruber kind of gets, the unfortunate thing was in the beginning he assembles his team of guys, and then they just...
all of WWF wrestlers, yeah, exactly. Which I thought was hysterical.
And then he blows them up with his homemade C4, which I stupid, I shouldn't have read Jack's review, because he says in the review that, like, his first team doesn't go well, so I knew something was happening.
But it was funny when it happened.
But
I knew they couldn't stay in the movie the whole time. Like, once you see all these guys, like, you're like, they can't be in the whole movie.
And so he's in his office, MacGruber's in the office, and he just gets turned down, and then Ryan Felipe is in the office, and MacGruber's begging him to come back, and he's like, I will suck your dick.
I will suck your dick.
And that's what I knew. I was like, all right, thank you, MacGruber, for going this direction and just going crazy.
That was a pretty great running gag, too, because it happens later on in the movie, too, and it didn't lose any of its comedic effect either time. I thought it was hysterical both times.
And then, I mean... I really, other than that, like, I don't really know, because there's a lot of funny moments, but I don't want to hear them talk about them, because I feel like people, if they see, I mean, there's a sex scene, which is played out really, really well.
There's a couple sex scenes,
and then there's a subsequent sex scene that's hilarious, and there's a bit with a celery that I thought was ridiculous.
Speaking of the celery scene, now that you brought it up, I wasn't going to bring it up. I do have to say that there's a little sadness in the fact that Ryan Phillippe, you know, loves to be naked in movies, it seems like, and his... naked scene in Cruel Intentions is one of the all-time greatest, like, nude scenes for a male ever, and it was kind of disappointing to see him in MacGruber. It just wasn't as, you know, I mean, obviously it's supposed to be funny, but I was a little disappointed as far as Ryan Phillippe's rear end goes.
But what about MacGruber's? Did I have to do that?
It was great.
It was great, yeah. I was surprised at Will Forte's bot.
Yeah, Will Forte has a great bot.
And, no, I mean, and then, like, they're just running gag of throw ripping, which is so ridiculous.
Which I never thought they were actually going to get to. Especially when Ryan Phillippe is like, do you even know how to do that? And then... yeah, he actually does.
And it has kind of like the build up of an act. I mean, there's this intense action scene at the end, even the action parts delivered. Anything else to add?
It was all overall pretty great. I thought there was some areas where they could have stepped it up. I thought a lot more could have been done with Kristen Wiig. I really liked the situations where she was being used as the guinea pig or the bait. I thought those were hysterical, and she did them really well. But overall, you know, it was great. I mean, it was good, and it could have been even better, but, I mean, I'm not going to complain. It wasn't, like, Superstar or Night at the Roxbury bad, so... Yeah.
See, I love Night at the Roxbury, but that's one of those movies where I watched when I was young, and I probably just, like I don't want to revisit it, because it's one...
I watched it when I was young, too. I was too mature for that film.
It is stupid. I would definitely recommend MacGruber, checking it out. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of just like kind of a one-note film that you'll laugh while you're watching it, and then there's nothing really afterwards. I mean, there's a few quotes that I guess you could,
exchange. I'm going to wonder if the I will suck your dick argument is going to take off with the people in this country. It might.
Yeah. You never know. But anyways, I mean, I guess try to support this film. I mean, it only made $4.1 million, which is kind of sad. And
It'll make it back in DVD, guaranteed, though. It'll be a huge DVD hit.
Yeah, totally. Like I said, check it out. I mean, neither of us saw Shrek Forever After, but I've talked to some people that have seen it, and they haven't been really too pleased.
The interesting thing about that was it was the very first movie to sell tickets for $20.
Yes.
It sold it for $20 in a couple locations in New York, and I'm really glad it bombed. I hope that sent a message. Yeah. Or it didn't bomb, but it didn't do like
well,
as great
it did.
As
I mean,
bombed.
It made $71 million, and that was over $50 million less than the third Shrek, which got terrible reviews.
Right.
And then it's even less than the second, you know. I mean, obviously you'll see, like, kind of diminishing returns, for the sequel. I mean, it depends. But hopefully, even with the 3D spike, and hopefully this $20 was, like, kind of a deterrent.
I hope that did not help
box office-wise. I don't think I'll ever watch Shrek Forever After, so you'll have to go also for your Shrek opinion.
Yeah, I didn't even bother with the third one. The only one I've ever seen is I've seen the second one, and I've seen the Shrek 3D ride at Universal Studios.
Yeah, so the first one, I love the first Shrek, but...
The ride is great.
Oh, the ride is great. Yeah. All right, I'll see that instead. And then next week we have Prince of Persia and Sex and the City 2, which John... I mean, John's kind of embargoed, I guess. I don't know.
I'm embargoed. Yeah, I can't say anything.
Now, did you...
I didn't sign anything.
That's true. A quick one or two sentences of Sex and the City 2.
It was pretty fierce.
It was fierce.
It was fierce. It looked amazing. It was fun. You know, yeah, it was fun. It was really great dialogue that I think, you know, a lot of people would probably enjoy. But, you know, it looked great.
Yeah, so if you're a fan, check it out, right?
Definitely. It'll probably do just as well as the first one.
Really? Okay.
I couldn't see why it wouldn't.
And then we have Prince of Persia, which I'm going to... There's no screening here, but I'm going to check it out this weekend. And hopefully we'll be back. I said we probably want to be back, but then I remember John was in Buffalo, so we just recorded this podcast just for you guys. So hopefully we'll be back next week. If not, we'll see you guys in the future. You can follow me on twitter.com/thefilmstage. Can you give out yours? Or is it too long?
Mine's not too long, but I don't remember the abbreviation.
All right.
But it's no Oscars for old women, but it's abbreviated so that it'll fit in their characters.
Just search John's name.
Yeah.
Or you can go on our Meet the Team page.
On the Meet the Team page, yes.
Yes, and you can follow him because he gets a lot of good opinions.
Yeah, I complain a lot.
So yeah, we'll be back in the near future. So thank you guys. Yeah.